Welcome into Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I'm your host, Ben Prince, joined tonight by just Ray Kuhn. How are you doing, Ray?
I'm good, Ben. What about you?
Doing good. You know, it's going to be a lot more fun, probably a lot more dull without Evan Peterson here.
Yeah, I mean, you might have a little easier way to talk. It might be a little freer for you, but we'll be entertaining nonetheless.
Yeah, I feel like, and you listened to the Michael Kay show, living in New York yourself, I would presume, correct?
Yeah, occasionally. Sometimes it's easier than others to listen to that.
I feel like Peter Rosenberg sometimes, being the third wheel, even though I'm hosting the show and everything, it's just like sometimes I don't get to say anything, and I kind of feel a little bit bummed.
Yeah, we'll make sure you have a voice today. We'll let you air out your opinions, for better or worse, I guess.
I only have good opinions, Ray. Let's be real here. I don't have a single bad opinion, and that includes Giancarlo Stanton.
Oh, boy, I can't wait for that one. That's going to be fun.
Isn't it sad that I own him and I still think that way of him? I own him in a keeper league. I get to keep him forever, and I still view him where I view him.
Well, if you can – well, I mean, the trick is obviously to trade him and make sure the person you're trading him to doesn't listen to the show.
I or guarantee you that they don't listen. No one even knows I'm on a podcast. They just don't listen to me.
All right, so maybe you might be able to shop them.
I tried to shop them last year because I owned them last year. I tried to shop them, and someone's like, I'll give you, because you keep in ESPN, you know how the keepers work. They're like, you keep the first 10 rounds, and I was like, give them to me for your first round pick. And they're like, I'll give them to you for like, I'll take him for my 18th round pick. I was like, 18th round pick? I was like, I get no value there. I was like, what are you kidding? I was like, oh, I'd rather drop him and re-add him. So he thought he was smart by not keeping all of his full players, and I beat him to it, and I kept one less than him, so I just kept him, again, just to spite him.
Nice.
So today we're going to be talking about the top 30 outfielders. We go about five or so tiers deep. Next week, we're going to go into a little bit deeper look at the outfield position once Evan Peterson is back. But, Ray, why don't you give our listeners your Twitter handle before we start?
My Twitter handle is Ray_Kuhn_28. What about yours?
I am at BBrennis, FWFB. Why don't we jump right in? And for your first tier, you have Mike Trout, Charlie Blackmon, Mookie Betts, Bryce Harper, and Giancarlo Stanton. Now, obviously, you have Mike Trout in a tier by himself.
I do.
So, does that mean he's like tier zero?
I guess you could say tier zero. I mean, to me, obviously, when you're sitting down, if you get the first overall pick, whether you want to call it a blessing or a curse, depending on what you're looking at, I mean, obviously drafting on the wheel then for the rest of the draft and having to sit there and watch all those picks go by and all those runs start and end without you can be rough. But if you get the first pick in the draft, you really – I mean, some people are saying you have a choice between Trout and Altuve. In reality, you really don't have a choice. It's going to be Trout. So to me, Trout is his own tier because when I'm sitting there considering taking Trout, there's no other outfielders that I'm thinking about. Reality, there's really no other players that I'm thinking about other than Mike Trout. And then the rest of my tier one, Blackmon, Betts, Harper, and Stanton, those are all guys that I'm thinking about taking, and in some cases I have taken, at some point in the first round. And I mean, I know obviously for you, you're not taking Stanton in the first round.
Yeah, Stanton round 12? What? I don't know. For me, I mean, my tier is Mike Trout, Blackmon, Harper, and Mookie Betts. So I'm in the same page with you there. And Mike Trout's my number one guy, too. You know, Charlie Blackmon's actually my third player off the board. So I don't know if that's me going a little too far. I've heard people say that may be – that's not typically where they'd consider going with their third pick. They'd rather have Arenado over Blackmon just to begin with. You know, some people are stating that they'd rather put some other people like Stanton over Blackmon. I personally would like to still be able to address some speed in my first outfielder, and that's why I have Blackmon there, because I think that he could even improve on last year's stolen base numbers, because I've seen him do it, but that's just me. What about a player like Mookie Betts or Bryce Harper? Obviously, we've seen them at their best over a couple of years ago, and when they've had some bad years. And, you know, when these players have bad years, they're still really good. They're obviously, you know, top 20 talent, top 10 talent. What would you say you're approaching, or how you're approaching a draft if you're looking to get Mookie Betts or Bryce Harper out of your first pick?
Okay, so now this is a good segue here for me. Because in the Great Fantasy Baseball Invitational, I had the fifth pick in the draft. Harper went fourth, so Harper was out for me. So it was between Blackman and Betts. At the end of the day, I went with Betts over Blackman because I was looking at Betts as somebody that can give me 25-25 potential, whereas Blackman isn't running as much. I think he stole like 14 bases last year. And obviously the talk moving him down to the third spot in the order – is great as far as his run production. But I think we're going to see the stolen bases maybe dip a little bit more in 2018. And if not dip anymore, I don't think we're not going to see Charlie Blackman stolen base threat like we did a few years ago. I think he's getting a little older. I think they're going to be a little more cautious with him going into his free agent year. And then especially they are serious moving him to the middle of the order. I have a hard time expecting him to top 15 stolen bases this year. So that's why I have Betts ahead of him. I mean, Blackman's going to drive in more runs, hit more homers, but Betts batting leadoff I'm also not necessarily worried about because last year he had 81 games in the leadoff spot and he drove in 56 runs in those 81 games. So if he spends the summer in the leadoff spot, we're looking at someone that's going to flirt with the 100 RBIs and you're going to get the batting average, and I think Betts still has some growing to do. So, I mean, it's close. I like both players. I've drafted both players, but I have Betts ahead of them.
Yeah, I mean, I absolutely love Mookie Betts. You know, I was in on him before his big breakout year a couple years ago. I could see the writing on the wall that this could be a 20-20, even a 25-25 guy who could get 100 runs and 80 RBIs with a 300 average. And he hasn't disappointed since he has been playing full-time and since he has turned into a fantasy all-star. You can't really state anything wrong with him other than the fact that the Red Sox kind of move him around the lineup a little bit too much, and there's an inconsistency whether he's going to have more RBIs or more runs scored. I think you'd like to see him maybe be at like 95 for each as opposed to 105 and 80 for each respective category, but I think if that's what where you're complaining, then there's not a lot you can really say negatively about the guy. I mean, last year he hit 264, so there's obviously a lot of growing pains that he can have with that, but, you know, he cleared 100 RBIs and 100 runs. This year he's obviously projected for closer to 80 to 85 RBIs because they're placing him back in the leadoff spot, but he still generates a lot of run production there, and that's a really good lineup, especially with JD there. So,
oh yeah, sure. I mean, I think he was a little bit unlucky in the first half too. I'm not necessarily concerned about the batting average.
Exactly. Why don't we move into the second tier, where I personally have JD Martinez, George Springer, Aaron Judge, and Cody Bellinger. And you, Ray, you have Cody Bellinger, Aaron Judge, George Springer, JD Martinez as well. So you and I are very much in sync with where we're going with our tier so far. Everything has been a match except for Giancarlo Stanton. So, and I'll get to him. I promise he's coming somewhere in my tiers. I promise. I know that's the big highlight for everyone right now, trying to figure out where I have him. Some people will say that I'm crazy for not putting him in this tier. And as I've said within our staff chat, there is a chance that I could easily bump him up into this tier. But at the same point in time, last year was the first year he was really healthy in multiple years, and you saw what he's able to do. But at the same point in time, yeah, he's had freak injuries. Or can I really put him up that high? I don't know. But we will cover more about him when we get to the next tier. A player like Cody Bellinger and Aaron Judge, they're obviously coming into their second full-term season. What gives you the confidence that both of them can stay in this tier?
I mean, I think I have more confidence in Bellinger than Judge, to tell you the truth. And Judge is one player I'm likely not going to end up with. I have them ranked 6-7 in my outfield rankings, but I find myself ending up with Bellinger a lot more than Judge, just because I think Judge – well, I mean, we saw Judge really at his best and at his worst last year. I mean, after the All-Star break, this July and August were really dreadful for him. But I think part of it was the shoulder. I think it was bothering him more than he let on, more than the Yankees let on, maybe even more than the Yankees knew. And at this point, it seems to be – everything seems to be okay with the shoulder. I'd still like to see him make better contact, be a little less streaky, but I mean that power is ridiculous. The power metrics are off the chart. You have to respect that, but I'm not sure we're looking at much more than a 250 hitter here. I mean, Bellinger's not really – I mean, Bellinger's higher. Bellinger will probably be around the 270 range, but to me, I think Bellinger might be a little less prone to slumps due to the higher contact rate. His power metrics aren't as good as Judge's, but they're still pretty good. And the contact's a little better, and you're going to get 10 to 15 steals from Bellinger, where you're going to get 5 to 10 from Judge. So for whatever that's worth, that counts too. And you get dual eligibility out of Bellinger as well.
Yeah, for me, I mean, Cody Bellinger is a player that I didn't expect to have this much success this early on. And I knew that he had a lot of power in his bat, but you had seen a player like Jock Peterson who had come up through the same system. He had a lot of pop early on, and he did not make adjustments for the second half once pitchers figured him out. Cody Bellinger had a little bit of an issue trying to make the adjustments, but he was able to make some, even though he hasn't fully been able to make every adjustment. He did make enough to be able to still hit for a lot of power. For Cody Bellinger, with an extra 100 or so at-bats, do I see him being able to get an extra 5 or 6 stolen bases like you said? I'm not sure, because he had 10 and 480 at-bats. Obviously, there's more plate appearances in there, but if he only had 10, if he gets another 100 or so at-bats, is he really going to be able to put up, you know, another 5? Probably not. I could see him maxing out at maybe about 12 or so stolen bases, and Aaron Judge maybe being able to get to 10 again, because Aaron Judge does have pretty good speed for a big guy like himself. But with Cody Bellinger, what I need to see from him is for him to be a consistent 280 hitter, and then I'll be very happy with where I'm getting his production. You can expect him to get close to 100 runs this year, because he's going to be in a lineup full time. You don't have to worry about Adrian Gonzalez or any other one taking playing time away from him. Obviously, there were some concerns last year when he came up that he was going to lose playing time once people came back from injuries. He kind of squashed those, but obviously he did lose occasional playing time. But having him up for the full season will be great. He is someone who could challenge that 50 RBI total or 50 home run total, I think, this upcoming year. But I'd settle for 35 to 40. And I don't think that there's anything wrong with that. If you heard Chuck Anderson on our podcast last year, he was someone who said that Cody Bellinger should be an easy lock for 45. And I was like, I don't know how you can say that necessarily, because there's so many different factors that could come into play that saying an easy lock for 45 is real tough, especially considering how many players hit 45 home runs on a yearly basis.
Yeah, no, I can't lock him in for 45. I mean, Judge is more of the lock for 45 for me. I still wouldn't even necessarily consider it an easy lock either, I think. As excited as everyone is getting about the Yankees outfield and the Yankees in general and their offense and Judge, if you gave me 45 over-under on homers, I'm most likely taking the under on that. What about you?
I think I would have to take the under, just because it's so tough to project people's home run totals and everything from year to year, people's at-bats, BABIPs. There's so many things that could come into play. And obviously, Aaron Judge was still able to hit 52 last year, and he had an absolutely terrible 2 months. When he came back from the All-Star break, he was just downright awful. So we don't really know exactly how he's going to be able to do. I still think that there's a chance he goes over, a pretty good chance, but I think I'd have to go with the under. In terms of complete RBIs and everything, Aaron Judge is going to be one of the most complete players out there, even though he's unlikely to get double-digit steals and unlikely to hit 300. I still think the fact that he could easily put up 130 runs and 115 RBIs and 50 home runs, plus, you know, 8 steals and a 280 average, I still think that you're going to get great value there. The question is, how early is he going to go in your draft? Some people I've seen take him as high as 5 or 6. And
can't do that.
And there's some leagues that I could see him going to 15, which I think is way too far. He seems like a player that should settle into 10 or 11 range for me personally.
You're saying you would take Judge with the 10th or 11th pick overall?
Depending on how big the league is. You know, if you're in a if you're in an NFBC league, he's someone that I could consider at that range just because you can still get a player like a Jose Ramirez on the way back. Obviously, I understand that there's a chance he doesn't have the same season as last year, but I think that the power and the stats that he's able to bring to the table is almost too much to pass up over someone like a Clayton Kershaw or Max Scherzer. I just, after seeing how pitchers had gone in DL so often last year, it's tough for me to take a pitcher at that part of the first or second round.
No, I hear you. But, I mean, again, that's a different conversation with draft strategy and NFBC specifically. But, I mean, then you're really left high and dry, I think, on starting pitchers. I mean, to me, I'm going to consider my first 5 outfielders in the first round. And then after that, I'm looking more in the second round. Then I'm going to go with maybe a more proven first baseman before I take a Bellinger or a Judge.
Yeah, I mean, personally, the likelihood that I actually take Aaron Judge in any leagues is pretty slim, and you've heard me talk about this in every other podcast I do. I may have him ranked that high, but the likelihood that I'm taking him there is pretty slim just because I think I would rather take someone else. I think that there's other players I can take. You know, I've seen Paul Goldschmidt fall to that, and I'd rather have Paul Goldschmidt even with the humidor problems just because I know what I'm getting from him, and there could be some variables in Judge's game. But I do think that Judge has the capability of being a top-10 fantasy player this year, making it worthy of him to be a top-10 pick, even if you don't necessarily gain on the value you're drafting him at.
Yeah, I mean, to me, there's only downside in that there's not necessarily upside. I think you're taking him expecting him to be at his peak.
Exactly. What about a player like J.D. Martinez, who obviously has had foot problems and he had his medical examination before signing with Boston, which revealed that he could have foot problems down the road. And obviously, he's had injuries over the last couple of years. Is he someone who you peg as a player who's going to put up fantastic stats even with the injury tag attached to him? Or is he someone that if he stays healthy, he could actually put up better power numbers than Giancarlo Stanton?
No, I'm not. Regardless of anything, he's not putting up better power numbers than Stanton, at least in my opinion.
Unless Stanton gets hurt.
Yeah, I mean, again, you might differ on that, but I mean, it also took a week for Boston and Martinez to finalize their contract because they were concerned about his foot injury. I mean, the thing for me that really stands out like a sore thumb for Martinez is last year he had a 33.8% home run to fly ball rate. I mean, we know some of the metrics when he was in Detroit were a little bit of kooky. Some of the StatCast stuff was a little kooky as far as the measurement. We know about Arizona. We know where he spent the second half of the year. They now have the humidor, yada, yada, yada. I'm not getting into that. I don't feel like busting out the physics book tonight. But, I'm concerned more about the foot than anything else. I mean, I think it's ultimately going to be fine. The fact that he can DH most of the time is a plus. But, I mean, that's putting Hanley into the field. So, I mean, how often do you really want to do that? Obviously, the Green Monster, small ballparks in the AL East, that lineup, everything is set up for Martinez to do great. The power is real, but I don't expect him to repeat 33.8% home run to fly ball rate. It's just not practical to me to expect that. So to me, I'm overpaying for Martinez if that's the case, and he's another player like Judge, that I'm probably not going to end up with on any teams just because I'm going to look for maybe a more safer, more predictable option.
I mean, I don't really worry about Hanley Ramirez playing it in field. I think that they'd rather Mitch Moreland do it. And, you know, kind of bye-bye Hanley. I think that's, I believe that's more of what's likely to happen. And, you know, if Bradley Jr. is terrible again for stretches, they could put JD in the field and put Mookie in center and let Hanley play DH. And I think that's more likely than Hanley actually playing in the field, personally. But
no, I think it's more likely, but it made me kind of, I mean, it could just me being overly cynical, overly looking into this a little too much because it's draft season. But the fact that they initially came out and said that Hanley's going to play first and JD's going to DH, that, I mean, when we, you know, that there's some question marks about Jackie Bradley, that it just made me pause for a second. That, I mean, I'm not sure if I'm being overly dramatic here or what, but I'm just not 100% all in on him.
You're such a dramatic person, right?
I know. I really am being dramatic here.
Why don't we move into the third tier, where you have Justin Upton, Andrew Benintendi, Marcell Ozuna, Starling Marte, Christian Yelich. And myself, I have Marcell Ozuna, Giancarlo San, Justin Upton, Andrew Benintendi, Tony Pham, Domingo Santana, and Rhys Hoskins. Now, I don't know if you ended up actually putting Rhys Hoskins into your outfield tier, but is he someone that would make this tier for you more than likely?
I have Hoskins in my fourth tier.
I now see his name. Yes, you do have him. You have him in your fourth tier.
He's my 21st ranked outfielder, and something that I played around with a bunch last night when I was looking over some things and actually inspired me to write the article that's coming out tomorrow, insert plug here, about Rhys Hoskins or Jay Bruce, who would you rather?
It's all about Jay Bruce, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
Nice, because I own him.
There you go.
I own him everywhere, except for...
But I mean, but overall,
I know.
Overall, I'd rather Hoskins.
So if the Mets could, in real life, trade Jay Bruce for Hoskins? You're saying?
I think you should call WFAN, the sports radio station in New York, tomorrow and put that out there.
Tomorrow.
Or better yet, call Philly.
You know what? I'm just going to tweet at Sandy Alderson and hope that he listens to me.
And I think you should tweet at the Phillies and say, you know what? Rhys Hoskins for Jay Bruce. Done.
I'll take care of the money myself, I think, and the difference in the two deals.
Yeah.
Obviously, I have Giancarlo Stanton here in my third tier. He's my 10th ranked outfielder. I know. I'm sorry, everyone. You're all going to hate me when you hear this podcast, if you already didn't hate me. So, you know, I guess I just lost the last six people who liked me on this podcast. I don't know.
It's a safe space here. So
I can feel Evan yelling at me, even though he's not here, being like, what are you doing? Why would you ever do this? That is so dumb. That sounds, I mean, that's exactly how Evan would be handling this, I think.
You know what? Let's give you the forum. Why is he your 10th ranked outfielder?
Personally, I just don't know if I can trust him to play 145, 150 games. I think that if he plays 120 to 130, then he's going to end up finishing around your 10th overall outfielder, which makes me would not want to take him inside of my before my 10th ranked outfielder as a result. Basically, because I can't expect him to be able to put up that amount of games, and obviously it's tough for me to say, you know what, JD's able to, but look at what JD did in 119 games last year. So he's capable of having huge numbers, and obviously I don't expect JD to be able to do that again. But JD consistently can still hit 30 home runs in 120 games. Stanton necessarily may not do that. He is obviously in a much better lineup than he was last year, but Ozuna last year was still fantastic. Gallister was fantastic. There was D. Gordon. So it's not like the Marlins lineup was terrible. It's just that the Yankees is just that much better than the Marlins was last year. I still think that if he plays in 130 games, he's going to give you 10th overall outfielder value, and as a result, that's why he's my number 10th. I could easily put Ozuna and Stanton in my second tier because they could deserve that. I just think that it was easier for me to break it up and put them into this tier because I'm not sure what they're going to do on a new team. Everyone in this tier, except for Andrew Benintendi, basically is in a different position than where they were entering into the season last year. You know, Rhys Hoskins wasn't up last year. Giancarlo's on a new team. Ozuna's on a new team. Justin Upton's on a new team from where he started. Tony Pham wasn't even a consideration last year in drafts. Domingo Santana clearly jumped up the ranks as he was able to put up like a 30-15 season last year, and he could easily do it again, even though their outfield is clogged. You know, the only person in this tier who hasn't really changed from last year into this year is Benintendi from this tier. So, you know, it's kind of a new scenario for a lot of players, which is, you know, Santa could stay healthy as a DH, but at the same point in time, he could also play right field and, you know, he could still get hurt. It's not like just because he's a DH, he's unlikely to get hurt. So, yeah, I believe that's mostly why I put him in this tier.
So you have him in the same tier as Tommy Pham?
Yes.
So now I guess first point is that stands out to me like a sore thumb. I mean, Pham has, what, half a season? I mean, obviously it was a hell of a half a season, but still.
Do you need me to get Matt Thompson to come just destroy you on a podcast? I'll call him right now.
This isn't about Pham. This isn't about Pham.
I know it's not.
What round would you take Pham in?
Fourth or fifth?
And what round would you take Stanton in?
Third, second.
So how can,
more than likely second.
So you're saying you take Stanton, so you're okay taking Stanton in the second round as your 10th ranked outfielder?
Yeah.
That I can get behind. That I can get behind, but I can't get behind having him in the same tier as Tommy Pham, who is half a year, and you wouldn't take until the fourth or the fifth round.
See, here's the thing with Tony Pham and Domingo Santana and Rhys Hoskins. I think that while they're in this tier, it's because of the power-speed combo that they're able to bring to the table. Same with Andrew Benintendi, Justin Upton. All of these guys are able to put up 10 to 15 steals, potentially, depending on how they run. Hoskins is obviously the least likely to do that out of the group outside of Stan. But I think that these guys would be great number twos for your team. There's a lot of upside here. I understand Tony Pham hasn't really done it, but they also haven't really given him enough of a chance. He played players like Grichuk and Piscotty and Alan Craig over him. There weren't a ton of players that they weren't concerned giving time to over Tony Pham. I think some of these players could get you value in drafts. You've seen Domingo Santana go as late as 80 or 100 in some drafts. I consider him to be a top 50 player in most drafts, so the fact I can get him at 80 is a fantastic value for me.
Oh, there's definitely value there. I mean, I have Santana in my fifth tier. I have Pham in my fourth tier. But, I mean, again, yeah, the Cardinals didn't give him a chance until last year. But, I mean, there's also, again, aside from the Piscottis and the Grichuks of the world taking up space, there's still a reason why they didn't give him a chance until last year. And again, it's half a year. But I mean, I have a hard time getting – I'm trying to get behind you here. I'm trying to. But I have a hard time saying Stanton in the second round is the same tier as Pham in the fourth or the fifth.
Now,
that I'm not taking Pham and thinking about Pham until the fifth, most likely in most drafts, that's here or there.
Now, the thing is I'm willing to go early on Pham because I believe in the breakout. I believe that if it was a normal draft and I had to wait for where he's going, the likely spot that he's going is like 65.
Exactly.
So I consider him higher, even though I can totally – I may take him in the fourth or fifth round, but I understand that I could wait on him just like I could wait on Domingo Santana and take them a little bit later, even though I personally would have them higher. So if I'm in a league where I know someone likes him, they also are going to know that I like him enough, and it's either going to force him to reach and potentially lead someone else to fall, or it's going to force them to have to decide if they're going to reach and potentially allow someone to fall to me.
I mean, that's not a bad strategy to have either. To say, hey, I'm going to sit back and I'm going to wait and I'm going to get Pham and I'm going to get Santana. And I'm going to get two guys with 2015, 2020, 2015, whatever it is, somewhere in that range, I'm going to get two guys with that potential. So I totally get that. But now, so you're comfortable with JD in the 119 games he played last year?
Yes.
You're comfortable with his health. You're comfortable,
With him playing 120 games.
But now, if he plays 120 games, he's not repeating that home run total. If he plays the same amount of games, he's not repeating the home run total.
No, I could see him putting up 35, though.
Because he's not, I mean, again, I touched on it before, he's not repeating that 34% home runs fly ball rate. So he hit, here we go, he hit 45 last year. So you want to discount that to 35?
Yes.
And so you're comfortable with that at 120 games?
Yes.
How many games are you projecting Stanton for? Or are you expecting from Stanton?
127 to 135. I believe that's what I had as my projection.
Okay, because over the last 6 years, he averaged 135.
Yeah. And I know that JD averaged less than him by, I think, like 7 or 8 games.
Now, I think the DH will help Stanton some. I'm not sure how much. If he's going to get hurt, he's going to get hurt. I think it might help lessen the load on him. We can get into the whole discussion of fatigue and fatigue from playing the field and how much that leads to injury. If they DH him once or twice a week, that will help, et cetera, et cetera. So I think there's something to that. But I think you're right, you have to bake in a DL stint, and you have to bake in that he's not playing 159 games.
So the issue was that in the staff league, everyone was giving me a lot of grief because they're like, well, I don't know how you can say that JD is going to be someone who can do okay, and then you can't say the same for Santa. I'm like, well, I don't know why you're saying that. I expect them both to be able to play, about 120 to 135 games. I was like, they're both going to be DH, which will help them, so there's a higher probability that they both stay healthy. But at the same point in time, if they play roughly the same amount of games, there's a good chance that they both put up similar numbers. And obviously, I've seen what Stan's able to do in smaller amounts. But at the same point in time, JD had a better season in less games than what Stan has done at other abbreviated seasons. Now, obviously, one season's not predictive of the next, but I still think that if they both have abbreviated seasons, there is a good chance that JD could put up better numbers. And that was my theory behind why I have JD a couple of spots ahead of Giancarlo Stanton.
I still disagree with. I get what you're saying. I get parts of your argument, but if you're going to give the same amount of at bats to Stanton and JD, I'm taking Stanton every day of the week. In that small Yankee Stadium, after the park you was just in Miami, if you have the same amount of at-bats, I'm taking Stanton every day of the week.
Well, I guess that means I get JD.
And then you can't discount. I mean, again, Stanton coming to New York isn't exactly easy, but JD going to Boston isn't easy either. And it's going to be an adjustment for both of them. But I think same amount of at-bats, Stanton over JD.
Fair enough. Why don't we talk about a couple other players in this tier. What are you expecting from a player like Domingo Santana this year? Obviously, there's a lot of people talking and jumping off the bandwagon because of who the Brewers have brought in, Ryan Braun and Eric Thames still being there. What can we expect from Domingo Santana?
I say please jump off the bandwagon because I think Braun playing first base is pretty much a foregone conclusion. I mean, yeah, maybe he'll see a little bit of time still in the outfield, but I think Santana is more of the future for the Brewers than Braun is. I think the Brewers are committed to Santana. I think Santana would also be the guy to spell Yelich and Kane if either of them get a day off. So that could also give Braun some ABs in the outfield. And I think there's also the impetus to keep Braun healthy, to take care of the back, and they have the depth, they have the luxury for him not to play every day. So, I mean, Santana, he certainly has the tools. Again, it's going to be struggle with consistency, struggle to make the contact, but there's some power there. There's some speed there. I think, again, if you're going to wait a little bit on outfielder, Santana is certainly a strong second or third outfielder.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, I love Domingo. I mean, I've talked about him all offseason on numerous platforms that I'm in love with the dude. You know, I think that he's someone who could go 30-20 with a 280 average.
No, that's
my opinion, Ray. I'm entitled to it.
You know, you're entitled to have your opinion, but so 30-20 you're thinking.
I mean, that's only 5 more stolen bases than last year. Is that totally unheard of?
It's not. The stolen base part I can buy. I just don't know that he's repeating 30 homers.
Yeah, I feel like everyone's against him repeating 30 homers and okay with him chipping on an additional 5 steals. I think it's more likely he puts up 30 home runs than he does an additional 5 steals, but that's just me. I mean, I personally think that he doesn't have a reason to really get benched unless the brawn at first base is just so horrendous that they have to be able to play him in the outfield. And if you have to play him in the outfield, the question is, A, can Domingo Santana potentially move into the infield, which is probably pretty unlikely?
Yeah,
or B, are they going to trade him? But you got to hope, if you're a Domingo Santana owner, that Ryan Braun succeeds at first base and doesn't have to play in the outfield, because A, first base will be better for him. He's less likely to get injured playing first than he is playing the outfield.
Yes.
And B, you know, if they are going to rotate, they can still give Kane days off and put Braun back in left field. But you need Braun to be able to succeed at first base for Domingo to be able to get ample playing time. Otherwise, you got to hope they get traded. And I would have thought they would have been traded by now, given what they did. But they must have some belief that Braun's going to be able to play a, you know, marginally average first base. Eric Thames wasn't a great first baseman, but he was decent. I think that he's lost most all of his value because it's going to be tough for him to really play anywhere else. I mean, yeah, you're the backup first baseman, backup outfielder, but then you also have another backup first baseman in Travis Shaw. So, you know, it's really tough to say how much value Eric Thames has this year.
Yeah, I'm not expecting much from Thames. I mean, the thing that, again, holds me back is the same thing. One of the things I brought up a lot when we were talking about JD was Santana had a 31% home run to fly ball rate. So it's really that people are expecting that not to hold, and that's why they're saying he's going to come off with the 30 home runs. And I'm also not sure that he's going to hit 278 again unless he makes some improvements and adjustments, because at 363, BABIP doesn't exactly play for that.
Yeah, I totally agree. Is there anyone else in this tier that you want to talk about, Ray?
I mean, I guess we should give a quick mention to Starling Marte now that he's passed the suspension. I mean, I know there's going to be some people skeptical of the fact that he was suspended for PEDs. And, I mean, whatever it happened, he's young. He's a player that relies on his legs. D. Gordon came back from it and seems to run just fine. We're not expecting much in the power department for Marte anyway. If he chips in 15 homers, I think everyone would be okay with that. But I think we could see some growth potentially from Marte, and we're looking at a 30 to 40 stolen base player. I know that's a large range, but this day and age with people not really running, that puts Marte towards the top of the leaderboard individually, and the fact that you're going to get a pretty decent batting average and some home runs, some RBIs, and he's going to score a decent amount of runs. I'm not necessarily sure I'm going to reach for Marte, but depending on the draft, depending on how the first few rounds of my team build go, if I end up with somebody like a Stanton in the first round or the second round, then, and I'm looking for speed, then maybe I will go after Marte in, you know, that 4 to 6 round range, depending on how the draft goes.
Yeah, I mean, I can like Marte a little bit, but there's not a ton of power there, and so his value is driven through the runs and his stolen bases, and obviously this team has gotten a little worse losing McCutchen and Gerrit Cole. Obviously, Gerrit Cole doesn't help the offense, really, but the offense isn't a great offensive unit in a lot of ways, so I'm not sure exactly how much value Marte is going to have unless Gregory Polanco really improves this upcoming season. Ray, we're going to take a short break, and we're going to have a message from our sponsor. If you like betting, I have a deal for you. Eli Rosenfeld of Vertex Betting is one of the best in the business, and unlike many betting information sites, he gives away all his info for free. There is no risk, no signups, no money needed to get the best betting insight in the business. Go check out vertexbetting.com and see why it beats all the other sites out there. And if you want to try out betting for the first time, click on the Bet Now link and sign up for MyBookie and or XBet with a $45 deposit. You will get a $50 rebate from Vertex Betting. Just tell Eli from Vertex that FWFB or Justin Mason sent you for a $50 rebate on a $45 deposit. All right, Ray, why don't we talk about our fourth tier? You have Byron Buxton, Tony Pham, AJ Pollock, Yoenis Cespedes, Lorenzo Cain, Billy Hamilton, Rhys Hoskins, and Andrew McCutchen in this tier. I myself have Starling Marte, Adam Eane, Chris Davis, AJ Pollock, Kristen Yelich, Andrew McCutchen, Yoenis Cespedes, and Ender Inciarte in this tier. Who from my tier is someone who kind of jumps out as maybe being a little higher than you anticipated?
I'm saying Inciarte in the fourth tier.
Well, he's a god, so you watch your mouth. And Evan Peterson would back me up if he was here.
I'm not saying I'm hating on Inciarte. I mean, I got to scroll down my list here. I have Inciarte as the last player in my fifth tier. So I'm not, by any means, hating on Inciarte. But how many stolen bases do you have him pegged for this year?
2,000. I would say 27.
You have him pegged for 27. And probably, what, about 10 home runs or so?
12 home runs, but about 107 runs.
Okay, I mean, again, that's also predicated on Inciarte getting the, I mean, what do you have, close to 700 plate appearances last year?
Yeah, he had an absolutely massive amount of plate. I mean, he had 662 at-bats. I think he had about 40, without looking, I think he had about 47 walks, maybe a little bit better, I can tell you. But, yeah, I mean, he's going to have an absolutely shit ton of plate appearances. It's going to be tough for you to be like, you know what? I don't think Ender Inciarte can score, 100 runs, but I'm pretty sure he's going to be able to. Last year he had 49 walks plus the 662 at-bats. So
718.
Pardon?
718 plate appearances, 22 stolen bases.
Yeah.
So now you're saying that he stole 22 last year in 718 plate appearances. The point that I was getting at was I'm not sure that he's going to be able to repeat 718 plate appearances again, because that's just crazy. So even if he does, which I don't think he will, what makes you think he's going to steal 5 more bases?
Well, I believe that he may have a little more inclination to run this year as the offense has other players like Albies and other players that can be able to move him along. I think that the offense is a little better this year. I think that he didn't seem overly inclined to run until more towards the second half of the year. I think if he keeps that aggression up, that 27 stolen bases is something he could pretty easily achieve. Obviously, I'd like to see him be able to still get on base at a 350 to a 375 clip. I don't think that getting an extra 14 or so runs from him is totally absurd. He put up 11 home runs last year, an extra one wouldn't be absurd. If he got 65 RBIs, that's totally reasonable as well. So I think that he's capable of being able to be a useful player, and obviously I consider him someone who's close to a top 20 player in the outfield.
I mean, again, same time, last few years, 19 bases in 14, 21 and 15, 16 in 2016. I do think he's going to get close to 100 runs. I think the lineup is better this year than it was last year. Can't disagree with that. But, again, I'm just not sure if I see it. He's going to hit around 300, 290, whatever. I think the average is going to be good. But I want my 20 stolen bases elsewhere in this tier. I want my 20 stolen bases from someone that's going to hit more than 10 home runs.
Now, let me ask you a question. Does player rater matter to you at all?
No, it doesn't.
Okay. So, last year he finished 11th on a standard 5x5 roto. He finished 11th in terms of outfielders. So, obviously, they skew steals, and he had 22 of them, so they do skew it a little bit because so many players hit for power now. But at the same point in time, is it that tough to imagine him as a potential top 20 option because of the fact that if he puts up a line similar to what he had last year and he has 395 runs, 10 home runs, 60 RBIs and 20 steals, that's still technically a top 20 option at the outfield because of the production that you get in three of the five categories.
But again, I mean, let's eliminate tier one. We have Bellinger, who's going to get 10 to 15. It's obviously less than Inciarte. Springer's not going to run. Judge isn't going to run. JD's obviously not going to run. Upton's going to chip in around 10. Benintendi's not going to get much less than Inciarte. I mean, obviously you have Benintendi higher. Azuna's not going to run. Yelich.
I mean, again, if you don't mind me asking, there's some players you say aren't going to run, but I'm curious as to why you think that, you know, someone like an Aaron Judge won't necessarily run.
No, but I'm saying he's not going to get more than 5 or 10. If I'm sitting there and I'm saying, all right, this guy is going to help me in stolen bases, Judge isn't someone that I'm going to count on. Like, if I'm going to say, all right, I want to get three guys that are going to get 20 to 30. Mm-hmm. You know, or three guys that get 15 to 20 and then get one guy that's going to get a little bit more and kind of – and then pick up incrementally from everybody else. I'd rather have Buxton than Inciarte. Obviously, I'd rather have Pham, I'd rather have Pollock, I'd rather have Kane.
How many outfielders last year do you think stole 20 or more stolen bases? Just outfielders.
Top of my head, I'm going to say 7.
19.
19? Okay. Yes. I was 19. Way off.
Now, you have to consider this. Player like Bradley Zimmer was at 18 and only had 299 at-bats. Obviously, he had more plate appearance, but I think he's someone who could get to 20. Now, you're going to lose a player like Ben Revere is unlikely to do it, but Ben Revere in 291 at-bats, and I don't have plate appearances in front of me. I'm sorry for all of our fans that listen. They're like, plate appearances are obviously more important. But he put up 21 and only 291 at-bats. Cam Broxton's unlikely to play in the majors a significant portion of this year, so his 21 are probably not counting. Jacoby Ellsbury is probably not going to get there again. But then you have players like Hamilton, Maven, Rajay Davis, who is unlikely to get it, but Delino DeShields, Buxton, Dyson, Kane, Betts, Pham, Nunez, Gardner, Trout, Inciarte, Marte, Pollock, Benintendi. I think all those players are capable of doing it. So even if you have 14... obviously, there's not a ton of stolen bases outside of the Maben, DeShields, and Billy Hamilton. And, you know, you could even throw Buxton and Dyson into there because those players are all capable of hitting 30. I'm not sure how many other players are going to really hit 30 on this upcoming year in terms of stolen bases. So if you're able to get 25 out of Inciarte, if he's a little more aggressive now that they have a better team, you're going to put yourself as one of the, you know, top 15 owners in stolen bases in terms of just one outfield player. How many stolen bases do you think wins the league? 125, 130?
About that. But, I mean, again, then if you're taking Inciarte to get those, let's just call it 25 steals and say he steals three more from last year, which I don't think he will, and continues with 700 plate appearances, which, again, I'm not betting on either. But for the sake of conversation, let's just say he does. So he gets you 25. And you're looking at 130, so you need 105 more steals. At the same time, you're taking Inciarte and his 10 home runs. You got to make up 20 home runs elsewhere, 15, 20 home runs elsewhere.
But you're able to do that if you go someone like, let's say, an Edwin Encarnacion, or if you go someone like a Cody Bellinger even, you know, because you could go Cody Bellinger and Ender Inciarte, and you could still be at almost 60 home runs between the two, which puts you roughly on pace for 30 per player, which is basically what you're trying to aim for. I think if you get 25 per player, you're happy. So all you have to do is have someone like a Bellinger hit 40 home runs and you get 10 from Ender and Ciarte, there's 50, there's the 25 that you need per player. So you could match him, and then you could still almost get 30 to 35 stolen bases between the two still, which is still ahead of where you want your per player average to be.
All right, yeah, no, I get that with Bellinger, but then you're losing necessarily the example. Not the example. You're losing the advantage of taking Bellinger and getting those, what do you want to call it, bonus deals or whatever, because then my point isn't necessarily the merits of Inciarte. It's the other guys that are in that tier that I pretty much rather everybody else because they're most likely going to give me more power or have more upside or hit drastically more home runs.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the players in my tier, you know, Marte, Eaton, Yelich, those players, and potentially AJ Pollock, those players could all hit, you know, 10 to 15 home runs. It's not completely unlikely that those players don't have a ton of power. So if you lump the players into the tier that I have them in, obviously, each player has their own strengths, but each have weaknesses as well. The reason I have him in my tier is basically similar to why I have someone like a Tony Pham in my third tier. I understand I can wait on someone like Ender and Ciarte and to pick 100, 110 to potentially get him. But I can still have him as a top 20 option, where other people may have him as a top 30 option, top 25. So the likelihood that I'm going to end up with him is better than someone else getting him. And I'm still going to get him right around the value of where I expect him to be, even though I can personally wait. I understand that someone like a Chris Taylor or an Adam Jones or Ryan Braun or even Billy Hamilton are likely to go ahead of a player like Ender and Ciarte. But that doesn't mean that I'm going to have to put them ahead in rankings if I value into Ciarte more. I'm willing to let someone else go for a Billy Hamilton if I can wait an extra three or four rounds to get someone like Ender and Ciarte, and I can also get someone like an Adam Eaton, who, between the two of them, could potentially put up, I don't know, 25 home runs and 40 steals, or 50 steals. So I don't necessarily need what Billy Hamilton's going to give me if I can go back-to-back with Eaton and Ciarte four rounds and five rounds respectively after Billy Hamilton and get similar production between the two and probably get more production in power and runs and average between those two players.
Yeah, no, I mean, you can wait on Ciarte. I just pulled up the NFBC ADP, and Ciarte's a 32nd outfielder off the board at ADP of 120. He's going two spots after Acuna per ADP. So, I mean, at that point, yeah, maybe a little more apt to take an Ciarte. So it's not necessarily the problem that I have with Ciarte. It's the problem of the tiering and maybe your ranking. I mean, I get your point.
Yeah, like, I have him as my 24th outfielder, and yeah, he's in my fourth tier. But it's just like you were saying, I have him projected to be my 24th. He's going 32nd. So the likelihood that I end up with him is greater than someone else. If they know that I'm going to likely get him, they're going to be forced to reach early, which is earlier than me, and they already know I'm going to be waiting, but I'm going to be grabbing him early enough that someone else won't at pick 140 or whatever he's falling to, and I'm still going to get a good value because I could get someone who's a borderline top 10 to top 15 outfielder if he puts up similar stats, and I understand player rater doesn't necessarily mean anything, but at the same point in time, you have to be playing a lot of games for it to be able to do it. So if he's able to put up similar numbers, he's either getting a crap ton of steals because ESPN favors steals more, or he's playing a crap ton of games and putting up good stats all the way around.
All right, so now here's a question for you. Because based on my rankings, I mean, I might be a little high. Would you rather have Inciarte or Kiermaier?
Well, we don't condone smoking on this podcast, right? So you better stop being high. bad joke. Where's Matt Thompson when you need a bad pun? personally, I have Ender and Ciarte higher, but I can understand the value of getting someone like a Kevin Kiermaier later because of the stats that he puts up in the abbreviated amount of games. Now, if you're willing to be able to compensate someone like a Kevin Kiermaier later in the game, by having players that are not big injury concerns, you could get someone like a Kiermaier or someone like a Cameron Maven, who's going to be an absolute fantastic source of steals later in the drafts, that you're not necessarily going to have to worry about, because you know that you can lock up 20 to 30 steals somewhere past 150 without having to pay a big price. And someone like Kiermaier is able to put up 15-plus home runs as well. He just needs to stay healthy. You don't know how many games you're going to get with him. You could get 70 games. You could also get 140. But the likelihood that he's closer to 70 is greater than the likelihood that he's at 140.
I mean, last year he had 300 less plate appearances than Inciarte. He hit 4 more home runs and only stole 6 less bases.
Yeah.
And 400 less plate appearances.
Now, the downside to someone like a Kevin Kiermaier is that he's not hitting at the top of the lineup. So the likelihood that he's going to have as many runs is less, because as of right now, they have Span and Matt Duffy projected to be 1 and 2 in the lineup. But that also gives Kiermaier a better chance for some pop and for some RBI opportunity that Ender and Ciarte won't have. It really depends on how you're trying to construct your team. For me, I may try to construct a team that I'm going to get someone like an Ender and Ciarte, and I'm going to load up on a ton of runs, and I'm going to load up on potentially stolen bases, and I can do that with Cameron Maben, who's projected to potentially lead off as well. Or I could go for someone like Kevin Kiermaier, who is projected to get me steals and power, and pair him with someone like a Mookie Betts that I'm also going to get steals and power. Obviously, those are massively different tiers, but I think that you're more
likely... Not for me.
What do you mean? I meant between Kiermaier to Mookie compared to what Maben and
NCR. Okay. Oh, I didn't say okay. Okay, makes sense.
Yeah, so you could get Mookie early, and you could potentially get Kiermaier to fall later because, yeah, Kiermaier is still going to go, but at the same point in time, some people underestimate what you're going to get from Kiermaier, and some people undervalue it even because of how many games he's actually able to play. Ender Inciarte is obviously someone who's undervalued because until you looked at it, would you have projected that he was probably the 32nd outfielder off the boards? Or would you have expected him to be closer to 20?
No, I would expect more in the 30s.
Okay. For me, I would expect him to, because of what he was able to do last year, and obviously last year he played career high, he got career high plate appearances. Obviously, if he's able to do that again, getting him at 32 is going to be an absolute steal because you know that you're likely getting good runs, you're probably getting 20-plus stolen bases, and you're going to get likely a 295 to 310 average.
Yeah, one more point on the runs. Kiermaier last year scored 58-6 in 98 games, which was 0.57 runs for every game. And our friend Inciarte, 93 and 158, which is 0.59 runs. So it really comes down to staying on the field for Kiermaier.
It does.
Because if he stays on the field, he's going to clearly finish as a better player than Inciarte.
Now, that's a little bit debatable because, A, the Braves lineup has improved and will improve once Acuna's up and another year with Albies and a year of Swanson and all of that. Now, the downside for the Rays is that the Rays have traded both Souza and Longoria. They haven't really done anything to replenish the outfield, to replenish any power or RBI people. You have Brad Miller hitting potentially cleanup in your lineup, and we know what Brad Miller is. So, while there's a chance that Kiermaier could stay on the field and potentially put up better run numbers, at the same point in time, the lineup around him has become worse, while the Braves have got better, so there is a chance that Ender's numbers could increase slightly and Kiermaier's could drop slightly. So you do have to be a little bit wary of that.
I think I'm smelling another friendly wager here.
How many friendly wagers have we had?
I think we have to have Stanton or JD who hits more home runs per game played.
Well, we'll bet a steak dinner at Wolfgang Puck's Steakhouse in New York City. So,
Wolfgang Puck's, come on, there's much better than that. You got Peter Lucas, you got...
I understand, but how much money do you think I got, bro? I mean, it's not like I'm taking it at McDonald's. I got to go to a steakhouse in New York. That's like $100 a plate.
Nah, you can get a good steak for like 50, in the 50s.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't really say you go and eat steak every day.
Yeah, come on, of course. Of course, man. Where do you think all this fantasy baseball insight comes from? It was from eating steak.
I thought it came from the mashed potatoes.
Man, you can't go too heavy on the mashed potatoes.
I didn't say too heavy. I just said I thought that the information came from the mashed potatoes.
Nah, it's all about the steak. It's all about
the
steak.
What about the asparagus?
Nah.
Okay, because I don't even like asparagus. I just wanted to make sure we were on the right page.
No, cream spinach, nice steak.
You lost me there.
And I honestly think Kiermaier plays 120 games.
That'd be great.
He's going to have same value, if not more, than NCR time.
Okay. Is there anyone else in this tier that you want to talk about? Because we have run a little bit longer on Ender Inciarte than I had initially anticipated. And this is all without Evan Peterson, the resident Braves fan, being on the podcast. Can you imagine how long we'd be? We'd still be talking about him for another 20 minutes.
Oh, and I mentioned the word Acuna. So that would have been another 10, 15 minutes right there, too.
What's an Acuna?
So, I mean, I'm not even gonna go there on Acuna. I don't think he starts the year with the Braves. I think we're going to see flashes from him. But I think expecting any rookie to do what Judge and Bellinger did last year is just crazy. So, that's really it. As far as my tier four, I'd love to see AJ Pollock stay healthy.
That won't happen. I love him, but that can't happen.
I really want to believe in him, but I can't see him staying healthy.
Yeah, I wish he did. I love AJ Pollock, but I mean that dude is glass.
That he is, and I mean, and maybe this will be the year that Buxton actually puts all those adjustments together. He's been up, he's been down, he's made the adjustments. He had a strong September. I think the Twins are an up and coming team. Maybe this will be the year we see it.
See, I think that the perfect pairing would be Jake Lamb in the first half, Byron Buxton in the second, because they both suck at the opposite. the opposite splits. It is horrendous as how bad they are in the first and second halves, respectively. It does not make any sense.
No, it really does not. That's 100% true.
I'm not sure if there's anyone that I want to go more in depth with. Obviously, we've kind of touched on everyone a little, what we'd like and everything. I think that the player that I'd rather talk about is someone in my next tier, and that's going to be a Billy Hamilton. I don't know if there's anyone else that you want to talk about outside of Billy Hamilton for your last tier, but I will go through them. You have Ryan Braun, Chris Davis, Ian Desmond, Nick Castellanos, Gregory Polanco, Domingo Santana, and Yasiel Puig in your fifth tier. My fifth tier has Steven Souza, Nick Castellanos, Chris Taylor, Greg Polanco, Adam Jones, Ryan Braun, Billy Hamilton. Is there anyone else outside of Billy Hamilton that you want to touch on that we should talk about first?
Well, I mean, I think we got Billy Hamilton, obviously, the steals, Chris Davis, we got the home runs. They're both one-trick ponies, but they're very good at those tricks. I think Desmond, if he got off to a terrible start last year in Colorado. I think the hand injury might have affected him more than we maybe realized. I think he's a solid bounce-back bet. Polanco is somebody that I like a lot, and I'm trying not to go too crazy on Polanco. I got a lot of crap from Mike Warner for taking him in Steph head-to-head league. But I think Polanco's kind of at that age. I think he's gonna put it together. I think we're gonna really see something from him. And I mean, I'm trying not to go crazy about all those videos of him in the off-season training and everything like that. But I think Polanco's gonna be another player that I'm not sure that he's going to end up being anything more than a solid third or fourth tier outfielder, but I think he's going to take the next step this year.
I don't know if Polanco can take the next step just because he's been so up and down, and it would be nice, but there's nothing in my watching him that makes me think he's going to improve, and it's not like, you know, I think that he's someone that I can get behind. Unfortunately, it would be nice if I could, but I'm debating if I want to, because someone like a Gregory Polanco, you know, I think they could have 20 home runs and 15 steals. But last year, I mean, he was hurt a little bit. He only had 39 runs last year. Like, I don't understand why this dude cannot do anything. 35 RBIs. I mean, Manny Margot had 39 RBIs in last year, and that was 487 at-bats, and that's disappointing. Obviously, Gregory Polanco would have been in a better RBI position, but he's not even leading off, and he only put up 35. So I'm not really sure what to make of someone like a Greg Polanco. I'd almost rather just not touch him, let someone else deal with him.
I mean, again, I'm talking about in, you know, that 100 to 150 pick range. You know, that's when I'm feeling a little frisky that I'm going to take a chance or two, and Polanco is definitely someone worth going after.
But wouldn't you rather take a chance to someone like Kevin Kiermaier over Gregory Polanco, who's probably an extra 25 to 30 picks later, if not more, and he's potentially able to put up the same thing as Greg Polanco was able to in a full season and maybe only half a season?
I'll tell you the truth, I'm going after both because I love – I mean, Polanco's not going to kill you on the solo, you know, go crazy on the solo basis, but I love those guys that are going to get the power, get the steals, have the upside. I mean, I think I took Polanco in the eighth round, 135th pick in that staff draft I was talking about. So I mean, that's kind of right around the range. Take him as third outfielder. At that point, I had already had Mookie Betts and Justin Upton. And then a few rounds later, I'm perfectly fine coming back and taking Kiermaier as my fourth outfielder.
Yeah, I mean, there's something wrong with that. I mean, I guess you could go Acuna. And where's Evan at? Where's he at?
I'm not getting – I mean, the problem is Acuna's going before both these guys.
I know. I don't know if that's a problem, though. I think that's good for players like us who wait on value, personally.
That is also true.
Let's talk about Billy Hamilton, because I hate him. You don't like him. The dude is good for one thing and one thing only. That's stolen bases. Yeah, he gets a decent amount of runs, but the dude has a terrible average, no pop, doesn't have RBIs. I kept saying that if he doesn't hit, he's not going to be someone who they play. Apparently, they still want to play him even though he can't hit and can't get on base. He's going to get you stolen bases. Yes, he's going to get you a lot of stolen bases. Does that mean that I want to tie all my value to a player who's going to get me a lot of stolen bases and maybe a decent amount of runs? Probably not, but that's because I'd rather have someone who's able to, you know, do what Kevin Kiermaier and Ender and Ciarte do and Manny Margot later on. You can get cheap steals in this draft. You could get someone like Cameron Maben, who gets you potentially 30 steals. You can get him 170 picks later after you get someone like Billy Hamilton. You may be able to even get more than 170 picks, and you can get half the steals. That's, I think, a much better value than someone like a Billy Hamilton. What do you think?
No, I mean, it's really all or nothing with Hamilton. I agree that everybody else, they're all better values. I get that, but the thing with Hamilton is, yeah, he's going to give you 50 to 60 steals, but you're drafting your team and you're building your team based on Hamilton getting 40 to 50% of the steals that you need to be competitive and to get your third place in that category. Hamilton stops hitting. Hamilton gets hurt. Then what? Then what do you do? So to me, I totally get the point of it, but I don't like committing to Billy Hamilton and committing to one player accounting for that much of one category, because Hamilton gets hurt. There's not necessarily replacement value for him because you're not finding those steals on the wire. So, I mean, aside from the fact that the guy has zero power and struggles to get on base and hit for average, aside from that, there's no replacement value in Hamilton if you lose him.
I just don't want any part of him. I think owning him makes me feel sick. There's nothing I like about his game. You know, the only reason we care for him in any type of baseball is the only fact that he gets steals. If fantasy didn't care about steals for whatever reason, I know that's not going to happen, but let's just say he would be an obsolete player. If he was someone who stole you 20 bases, he drops 200 spots in the draft.
Oh, yeah.
He's in useless if he doesn't get you 60 steals. If
he's in right. Roger Davis territory.
I just can't take someone who is a one-trick pony and doesn't have any chance to be able to give you anything else other than potentially giving you runs. And A, that lineup has got worse. B, you don't know that he's good enough to get on base at a 280 clip to even score you 85 runs. So how can you say that he's someone that you want to tie yourself to in any league? I can understand if he's in a dynasty league and you already own him, but then you're never even going to be able to trade for him because no fantasy owner is going to want to give up the steals that he gives. I'd rather have someone else hold him, and I can have two players or three players like Ender and Ciarte and Adam Eaton on my team who could give me almost as many steals like I was saying before, and there's a chance that they're going to triple his home run total by themselves, let alone combined. There's a good chance that both of them put up 90 runs this year. Both of them can hit 300. Both of them can have 65 RBIs, if not more. So I don't understand why you wouldn't want a player like Ender and Ciarte and Adam Eaton over a player like Billy Hamilton. Other than the fact you're losing 40 steals by yourself with one player, but at the same point in time, that's it. You're just losing steals, and it's one category. So like we said, if you need 130 steals to win the category, but you can get 120 to get second place, I may be more willing to get second place than have to tie everything to Billy Hamilton and be an absolute dead weight in three or four other categories.
Exactly, and depending on how you build your team, if you're gonna get first place in steals, at some point Hamilton's steals, some percentage of them might become worthless if you're in first place.
It's Eric Carabello always says it perfect, and he always talks about Billy Hamilton. You don't need to win the category by 50. You just need to win the category by one. Exactly. One steal. Is Billy Hamilton going to give you that one steal? Sure. But what's more likely? He gives you just one steal more than second place? Or he gives you 40 more?
And if he gives you 40 more, then you're wasting your time.
And that's the thing. Like, if you're in a redraft league, sure, you could keep Billy Hamilton for half a year and trade him. I see no issues with that. But at the same point in time, who's going to necessarily pay you good value halfway through a year when they only know that they're getting half the steals, and at the same point in time, they may be too far out of the race to be able to make up any difference.
And you have to watch who you trade them to, because what if you trade them to someone that's going to overtake you, and that's you're fighting within standings?
Exactly. Like, you can't trade them to someone who's within 30 steals of you, because he can do that by himself. So you got to find someone who's outside of 40 steals, probably just to be safe. And the likelihood that that person's going to want to trade for the when they're 40 steals back of you, sure, they could leapfrog four other people. But if those four points that they get doesn't necessarily do anything, it doesn't help. And if you're in a head-to-head league, you're not going to trade them because you don't get any value from trading them in a head-to-head league. So, how much draft value are you regaining from trading him in roto-only leagues halfway through the season to only a handful of teams that you can afford to give up 30-plus steals to?
Exactly. And then what if he gets hurt halfway through the year? Then, boom, your value's gone.
Yeah, exactly. At least someone like, an Adam Duvall, he's kind of a one-trick pony, and he may have a bad average, but at least he can still ship in five steals while hitting 30 home runs. A player like Billy Hamilton, you're going to get, two, maybe three home runs from him? Like, those home runs are more useless than anything else that you can get from a player, because they don't help you. The likelihood that those three home runs or whatever are going to be able to help you are such a small percentage. The likelihood that the five stolen bases that you get from your outfield four to help you pass someone else, you have a significantly better chance of having anything change in that position than you do those three home runs.
I completely agree.
All right, Ray, why don't you tell our listeners where you can be reached and what you're working on?
I am on Twitter, Ray_Kuhn_28. I am getting ready for the baseball season. I think I'm maybe doing a little bit better about that resolution to actually tweet a little more, be a little more interactive on Twitter. And coming out tomorrow, or which will be today if you're listening to this on Wednesday, is my Rhys Hoskins versus Jay Bruce comparison that I was inspired to do when I was preparing for this show. And you could also find me over at Roto Professor as well.
I can be reached at bbrennisfwfb. You can find me and Eric Mackey on the Friends with Fantasy Benefits basketball podcast through the rest of the season. You'll be able to find us occasionally during the off season as well. You can also find me, Donnie Miller, Brad Wells, and Colin Weatherwax on our new podcast, which will be talking about trades only. It will be our Saturday show. It's going to be a brand new show. We're going to discuss trades that have happened in our leagues, discuss trades that our listeners send us in, if they want us to debate their trades, if they want us to give them an option as to who they may want to ask for if they were trying to trade a certain player. If they made a trade and they want us to evaluate it, we'll gladly be able to do that. So if you have any questions, feel free to reach out to any of us on Twitter. We look forward to being able to start that. That show is expected to start within the next couple of weeks, if not sooner than that, from the rest of us at Friends with Fantasy Benefits. We also ask you to look into our draft guide that we just came out with within the last week. You can find it on Amazon. You know, we put a lot of work in. There's a lot of great content in there. Every single team is covered extensively. So that's something that I advise that you go and take a look at. From the rest of us at Friends with Fantasy Benefits, have a great baseball offseason, everyone.